ध्यायामोदबलावगुण्डनवतीं तेजोमयीं नैष्टिकीं स्निग्धापाङ्गविलोकिनीं भगवतीं मन्दस्मितश्रीमुखीं वात्सल्यामृतवर्षिणीं सुमधुरं सङ्कीर्तनालापिनीं श्यामाङ्गीं मधुसिक्तसूक्तिम् अमृतानन्दात्मिकामीश्वरीम्. So we saw the fourth shloka of Maya Panchakam in the previous day. So today we'll see the final shloka of Maya Panchakam. So as we have been discussing about Maya, so Maya is agatita agatana patiyasi Maya. Maya is that which makes the unreal, the impossible, possible. And Maya is also termed as Yuktivihina Prakashasya Sanya Maya. That which cannot stand logic, that which doesn't stand logic, that which cannot stand logic but still that which seems to be very real. So as if real, it seems to be very real but it is unreal. So Maya is unreal because whatever exists, sadeva saumya idam agre asit ekameva advitiyam. Sat or existence or Brahman alone exists at all times. So in the beginning, before creation, after creation, idam jagat nama rupa yuktam adya sat ikshyate srishte puraha Sadevasi Nama Rupa Vivarjitam. So Vidyaranya says in Anubhuti Prakasham that when creation is there, then Sat exists with Nama Rupa. When creation is not there, Sat exists as Sat itself without any Nama Rupa. So the difference, creation or Jagat itself means Nama Rupa. Nama Rupa is the definition for Jagat. It is a very proper definition for Jagat. That jagat which is anityam asukam. So again, like we have to remember the nature of jagat or maya as anityam and asukam. Because if we don't remember that, we will get distracted by the world, by objects or people of the world, rather than remaining focused on Brahman. So if we have to remain focused on Brahman, we should always remember Brahman. We should remember jagat to be Maya or Mithya. So the Maya or this creation is just Nama Rupam, it's not real. Whatever is real is Brahman alone. So before creation, after creation, during creation, during all those times, whatever exists is Brahman. Brahmaiva Jagat Sarvam. So this entire world is Brahman. Yacha Kinchit Jagat Sarvam Drishyate Shruyate Piva Antar Bahishchatat Sarvam Vyapyan Narayana Stitaha. Narayana, Vishnu is present in this world, like inside and outside of everything that is there in this world. Vishnu pervades this entire world inside and outside. Even as mud or gold pervades all objects made of mud, or all ornaments made of gold. So Kanakam, like even as Kanakam or even like gold ornaments, objects made of gold, objects made of mud. So they are all like Gata Kudhya Adhikam Sarvam Ratika Matrame Rahi. So various objects made of mud, like pot, wall, etc. are mud alone. The difference between each of those, the difference is only Nama Rupam. Difference is with respect to name and form. Whatever exists, the essential principle is mud alone. So in the same way, this world, the essential principle behind this world is Brahman. And Brahman alone exists at all times. It's not just when we experience a glimpse of Brahman. Even when we experience the world, the dual world that we see, Brahman alone exists. So this is something like that. We have to always remember that Brahman alone exists. Maya is just an illusion. Maya is something which doesn't even exist. Maya is something like that doesn't at all exist, which cannot exist in the Nirupama Nitya Niramshake Api Akande. In the Akanda Vastu of Brahman, there is no possibility of Maya existing. So if we try to analyze, analyze as to whether Maya can exist. Maya, like, is there any possibility of Maya existing in Brahman? We will realize, we will come to the conclusion that there is no Maya at all. Maya cannot exist. Maya doesn't exist at all. Whatever exists is one Brahman alone. So this is the ultimate truth that a sadhaka has to always remember. So if we don't remember this Advaitam or Advitiya Satyam, so this Advaita Bhavam, like if we don't have this like a non-dual perspective in our mind, so if we don't have this non-dual perspective in our mind, then we will get deluded by the dual world that we are experiencing now. So we will get distracted into the dual world. Dual world, the world is filled with duality, that's why it's called dual world. So Dvaita Prapancham. So when we are focused on Dvaita Prapancham, then what would happen is, like if we are focused on Dvaita Prapancham, if we are deluded into Dvaita Prapancham, then we will have Dvandva Bhavam. So Dvandva Bhavam means like we will get into likes and dislikes. So likes and dislikes means we will like something, we will hate something, which means Kama Krodham. So we will get into Raga Dvesham or Kama Krodham. So when we get into any of those notions, Raga Dvesham, Kama Krodham, Dvandva Bhavam, Dvaita Bhavam and all, so when we get into any of those notions, then the end result would be only Dukkham. Though initially, when we have such a Dvandva Bhavam, we may feel as if like we are experiencing some happiness. So we may seem to get a little bit of Sukham. So we may think like we are getting a bit of happiness from worldly objects, even though they are dual objects of the world. We may think like we are getting some happiness, but the happiness is very short-lived. Ehi samsparshaja bhoga dukkha yonaye evate adyantavanta kaunteya nateshu ramate buddha. Pleasures that we get from objects of the world, the objects of the world that we see, like if the pleasure that we get from them due to possessing the objects or enjoying those objects, they are short-lived. They are very short-lived. They are so short-lived that the very fact that they temporarily exist means that they only can give us temporary happiness, which means that they will only give us sorrow in the long run. Parinama tapa samskara dukkaihi gunavritti virodhascha dukkameva sarvam vivekinah. So parinama dukkam, when they change, when these objects, temporary objects change, we get dukkam. Change always causes dukkam. So when they change, like we get dukkam. Tapa dukkam, like when we have to go through a lot of pain in order to attain them, in order to possess them. So if we have to gain possession of some objects, like objects of the world, like if we have to possess something, then that itself is like a little bit of pain. We have to go through a lot of struggle in order to possess them. So possessing, like when we try to possess, when we try to gain that those objects, that also gives us dukkham. So that is tapa dukkham and samskara dukkham. So while we are experiencing the objects, they change, which means that gives us dukkham, parinama dukkham. Like before we attain them itself, we have to go through a lot of pain, lot of sorrow. And once we lose them, then also like samskaram, like we brood over the times when we had those objects, when we experienced those objects, remembering that we will have sorrow. So if we have to buy a car, then we have to go through a lot of pain to buy a car. We have to first earn a lot of money. After earning a lot of money, like we'll have to do some research. We'll have to go to some dealers, look at cars and see like what we like. So it's a lot of pain to buy a car. So once we buy the car, when we have the car, then also it's a pain, because Initially, the car runs very well for 1 week or 2 week or 1 month or 1 year, and after that, problems start with the car. You have to take it to the mechanic, you have to do maintenance, so it is a lot of pain. So car changes, so after 1 year, like, you have to change the tire, you have to change this, you have to change that. So a lot of things have to be changed, which means a lot of money, a lot of pain. So when we possess a car, also we go through a lot of pain, which means we experience sorrow. And once we lose the car, once the car, like, let's say, like, we meet with an accident where the car gets completely destroyed. So once the car gets completely destroyed, then also we will have experience sorrow when we think about the time when we had car. The car was running very proper. We will think, oh, the car was running very fine, very proper. And brooding over it, we will experience sorrow. Therefore, parinama tapa samskara dukkam. So, parinama dukkam. So, when we possess, when we don't possess, or when we strive to possess, when we possess, and after we possess, all those times, objects of the world only give us dukkam. That is why Krishna says that anityam asukam lokam. The world is anityam, temporary, and therefore it is sorrowful. It can only give us sorrow. It cannot give us happiness at all. Only a fool would think that he can get happiness from the world. So wise people will not take resort to them. So objects of the world will only give us dukkam. So this is something like that we have to always remember. If we remember this, that objects will give us dukkam, then what is the cause of dukkam? Objects. Are objects the cause of dukkam? Definitely, like, considering objects as different from one another is the cause of sorrow. It's not objects that are the cause of sorrow. So we may think, like, that objects are the cause of sorrow. Objects are not the cause of sorrow. Even a jnani, even a mahatma experiences objects like we experience. A mahatma also sees the world. A jnani sees the world, experiences the world, has sensual pleasures. All those are, a jnani also experiences even as we experience. The difference is that a jnani knows in his mind that these are unreal, these are not real, these are all place of maya. So even as a dream world, like, we experience dream world but are not affected by the dream world, because we know that the dream world is unreal, dream world is not at all there. In a similar way, a jnani sees this waking world as well, and therefore a jnani is never affected by them. So it is not objects per se that which cause dukkam, but considering objects to be real, that is the cause of problem. Ataha sarvasya jivasya bandhakrit manasam jagat. It is the mental creation, it is our mental perspective of objects. So objects, if we really know objects as they are means they are namarupam of Brahman, which means we will see Brahman only in them. So when we see Brahman in them and not the objects as such, then we will be able to experience immense bliss. But if we see objects as objects, like, from different from one another, and not Brahman in those objects, then we will experience dukkam. Therefore, we have to always avoid dvaita bhavam. Dvaita bhavam, if we have to avoid dvaita bhavam, we have to remember that Brahman alone exists here. So we have to always keep in mind that Brahman alone exists. This jagat is mithya, brahma satyam. Jagan mithya. This we have to always keep in mind. If we don't keep this in mind, then we will experience dukkam in one or the other way. And like, one of the greatest dukkam that can come to us through bhedam is differentiating between various deities or devatas, considering one devata as different from another. So this is something like which has had, history says that this has happened with respect to Shiva Bhaktas and Vishnu Bhaktas. Both of them, like, used to fight with each other. The fight used to be so strong that, like, even Appaya Dikshita's works and all, we can say Margabandhu Sotram was written because Vaishnavites had set booby traps, as we call it today. So booby traps are places like when Appaya Dikshita had to go out somewhere. So things might seem to be very real, but it is a trap. You fall into it. So as we see in movies, like, you walk in a road, you think you're, like, everything is proper, but, like, you step on one thing, like, it is a grenade. It's a bomb there. It's not a normal thing. So those are called booby traps. So we find the way or the reason why Margabandhu Stotram was written was Appaya Dikshitar was supposed to go and meet the king. So when Appaya Dikshitar was supposed to meet the king, like there were booby traps set for him, like people were waiting to kill him, were waiting to attack him. So that is what we see. In Margabandhu Stotram, where Appaya Dikshitar prays to Ishwara to protect him, to show him the proper path and help him in the path. So that is what we see there. So that means, like history says, though many people argue, history is something which is always subject to confusion, subject to a lot of conflict. We cannot clearly say about history. History means whatever is past. Past cannot be really explained very, very properly without any doubt. So there will always be some doubt. So historians will argue for and against. But history says that there were fight between Vishnu Bhaktas and Shiva Bhaktas. So if we think that was only like in ancient times and it doesn't happen today, then that is also completely wrong. So it is not like it is not something that happened ages ago and that doesn't happen now. So it is something which happens even today. So even today, like it is happening in various missions. So we may not see. These are not things which are kind of very evident externally. If when we mingle with people who are part of organizations, we can see that organizations are fighting with each other. So many missions are fighting with each other, though they may externally, the heads of those missions may respect each other, but still internally there are always such struggles, such fight is there. So as to who is right, who is wrong. So once one of Amma's sannyasi, while giving a discourse on Amma's birthday, he said like, Amma is the only Mahatma who is available today who can save us, who can protect us. So such statements are kind of unwanted. So such statements are not true as well, because Shastra Vedanta says like there is no Mahatma can help us out. Uddharet Atmanatmanam Natmanam Avasadayet. So like no Mahatma can help us out. A Mahatma can only guide us. So the final step is what we take. We have to take the step. No Mahatma can show us or give us moksha. Nobody can give us moksha. If somebody says, okay, come to me, I will give moksha, we can immediately reject that person as a false jnani. Because, like, jnanam is not something that can be gained like that. Jnanam is already there. We are already realized. They are like, where is moksha then? Everybody is a mukta. Then we don't realize it. We don't realize means we are ignorant about it. We have ignorance, a veil of ignorance. Maya is veiling us. We can put it in different words. But then like who should take the, who should work towards removing that ignorance veil? Ourself. Who else can help us? So it is like a doctor, like a person going to the doctor, and then the doctor is a super doctor that like he will just take the tablet and we'll be rid of our disease. It's impossible. So no Mahatma can give us moksha. And like when we talk about Mahatmas as giving moksha or guiding us towards moksha, Vedanta says that there are always like a lot of Mahatmas. Mahatmas are there everywhere. So there are jnanis and Mahatmas throughout. So it's not like only one Mahatma is there to protect us. When Amma herself preaches, says that whatever has been said by the Mahatmas and Jnanis of or Rishis of ancient times, that is what she is also preaching. The same thing she is saying, nothing new is to be said, such things are unwanted. So there will be like cases where such things do happen, that followers like bring in their own concept, their own vision. And when that happens, automatically there will be conflict. There will be conflict between various missions, various organizations. So, though like we talk about Shaivites and Vaishnavites fighting in ancient times, that is still happening today. Today also, the same thing happens. There are Vaishnavites who won't even go into a Shiva temple. There are Shakta Bhaktas who will think Shiva is great. There are many people who think Krishna is very great. Anything about Krishna, anything against Krishna, like they will become angry. Anything against Vedanta, anything against Dhamma, they will become angry. There are people like that. So such things are there even in today's situation or today's world. So all those are kind of not required. Vedanta never preaches any such bhedam, any such dvaita bhavam. Vedanta says that dvaitam means maya. Whether it is dvaitam like with respect to spirituality, whether it is respect to worldly, it doesn't matter. Even people like who say that spirituality is like this, spirituality is like that, like we can immediately tell that such a person is not spiritual at all. Because as Amma says, spirituality and worldly life both go hand in hand. Externally, only externally the world exists. If the world exists and we see the world as existing, then we should have a worldly life. Then what is spirituality? Spirituality is giving a proper vision of the world. Spirituality means a proper perspective to the world that we are experiencing. Seeing the world as Brahman, that is spirituality. So rather than like considering that as spirituality, many people get affected by spirituality. So if we don't do any japam, dhyanam, then that is not spirituality. And the opposite is also valid. So we should not get attached to any of those. We should not get into any of those arguments. We have to do our sadhana, as Shankara says, Geyam Gita Nama Sahasram. So we have to do sadhana. Sadhana of japam, dhyanam, bhajanam, shravanam, mananam, nididhyasanam. All those are required. But along with that, we have to remember that Brahman alone exists. This Advaita Bhavam should be there in our mind. If we don't have this Advaita Bhavam in our mind, then, like irrespective of whether we are a Vedantin, which means like we have no Vedanta, as we saw previously, Shruti, Shata Nigamanta Shodakanapi Haha Dhanadi Nidarshanena Sadhyaha. It doesn't matter whether we learn Shastras. It doesn't matter whether we go to spiritual masters like Amma. The greatest master, the greatest avatara, it doesn't matter. If we don't know this Advaita Bhavam, nothing can help us. Nothing can help us. Nothing means nothing. It is not something that the Shastras don't speak about. Neha Nanasti Kinchana. Mrityo samrityam gachyati yaiha nana iva pashyati. So, yastu atmeiva abhud vijanata tat kena kam pashye. So, there are many shlokas in Brihadaranyaka Upanishad as well. They don't come to my mind now. There are shlokas which say that he who sees things as different from one another. So, that is such a vision. Such a vision of duality or objects being different from one another is due to Brahman. It is a kind of an illusion. It's a delusion. It's not real. Pumso ayuktasya nanartho brahmaha. So, guna dosha adibhak. Nanartham. Thinking that objects are different from one another, that is a Brahman. That is a delusion. And that makes us get into guna dosham. Guna dosham means like we find out good and bad in those, which means we get attached or averted. And kamat krodho vijayate krodhat bhavati sammoha smriti vibhrama. So all those, like we can remember all those shlokas. So we will get destroyed completely. We will suffer like anything, irrespective of whether we go to a Mahatma like Amma. So if we meet people who are even with Amma, an avatara like Amma, even there we can find people like who are not at all happy. People who have been with Amma for 20 years, 30 years. So if we talk to such people, like we will find out that even they are not happy. They are not happy with whatever is happening with their life. They want more and more. Okay, if you think like such people are impossible, then like my aunt itself is there, is a perfect example. They have been following Amma since 91, the time when we met Amma. So even now they are going to Amma, but there is always a comparison. So whenever they come to our house, like they will say, oh, we met Amma last time. We are closer to Amma than you. And then like whenever going to Amma, what? Amma, my daughter should get into MBBS. Amma, my daughter should get married. So that is what happened. So when we like when we go to a spiritual master like Amma, and rather than gaining that surrender, getting that surrender, complete surrender, remembering Amma, you have given me knowledge, let me remember it. So if a person follows such a spiritual master like Amma for 20-25 years, definitely there will be knowledge. Because there cannot be a person who hasn't got any knowledge from Amma, because Amma always speaks knowledge. But still, there will be always other things to ask. So that means there is dvandva bhavam, dvaita bhavam is there. If that is there, there will be no gati, there will be no contentment in the mind. Such a bhakta will never be able to say, "Oh Ishwara, I am content, I am happy." So that is moksha. Moksha means like moksha is not something like we learn a lot and all of a sudden one fine day we wake up in the morning and we realize, "Oh, I am now realized." That is not moksha. Moksha means contentment, full contentment, samtripti, santushto yena kena chit, as Krishna says in the 12th chapter of Gita, being content with whatever is there. So I am happy, O Ishwara, I am very happy now. I am content. So when a Mahatma like Amma asks us, "Okay, what do you want, my dear son, my dear daughter, what do you want?" If we are able to say, "Amma, like I don't want anything, I am content." It's not just in words. Again, like externally we can say, "Amma, I don't want anything." And internally we can say, "Amma, I don't want anything." But internally, "Amma, but I would love a Ferrari. I would love a proper husband. I would love like to become the head of that department. I would love a promotion. I would love a new job." So if we ask all those, then there is no contentment. So externally, when we talk externally with such a spiritual master, like it's not about external talking, it's also about our mental state, what we really want. So if we are able to say, "Oh, I am content, I don't need anything, I am very happy, I know the truth. What is truth? Truth already, like we know, we have been learning for many years now. Although we have been learning for many years, how many of us are able to really get rid of attachment, get rid of passions? Very few. When father comes, when mother comes, when sisters, brothers, relatives and all come, then like everything changes. The perspective changes. So it is like we are sitting, we go to office and we are working. We are in front of the computer. So we are reading Bhagavad Gita. All of a sudden, like we see our boss coming towards us. Then what will happen? Immediately, I have to close it, and immediately close it. So that is how our conviction of knowledge is. So our conviction of knowledge is so weak that like when somebody else comes in front of us, we cannot stand by what we believe. So there are many times like when we encounter such situations when people try to impose their views. Of course, worldly people are always like that. They try to impose their views. Vedanta never imposes any views. Paramartha has been speaking, giving discourses for 30-35 years now. We cannot find even in one place where he imposes anything. Balakrishna also says, there is no imposing. Krishna himself doesn't impose at the end of Gita, like after instructing Arjuna a lot, Arjuna has a little bit surrendered to Krishna. Still Krishna says, "Itite jnana makhyatam guhya duhyataram maya." Thus I have propounded to you knowledge, which is a very very secretive knowledge. It is something like which is very rare to get. Rare to get from a person who is experiencing it. Vibrashyeta asheshena. Analyze, critically analyze this as much as you want. Try to analyze. Don't blindly believe. Try to analyze it. And after analyzing it, yate chasi tatha kuru. Whatever you feel like, you do. So that means there is no imposing. Like you figure it out. You figure it out yourself. You analyze yourself and then do it. So though Vedanta might say like a person who sees duality will go from mrityu to mrityu, which means he will suffer. That doesn't mean Vedanta says that we should we should follow it. There is no imposing in Vedanta, but there are people like in the world who impose views upon others. So we should not fall a prey to any of those. We should be able to stand by what is truth. So that is the nature of a seeker. The nature of a seeker is a seeker will be able to stand by the truth. Not just like give an impression as if standing by truth, and immediately when boss comes or parents come, then like everything vanishes. Everything goes down the drain. So that is not how a sadhaka would be. That means if a sadhaka is behaving that way, then that means there is dvandva bhavam, there is dvaita bhavam. Oh, if I like start arguing with my boss, then like I'll lose my job. Nobody will lose your job. Someday we have to lose our job. What is the use of fearing? If the boss, in today's environment, no boss will like argue with us with respect to concepts. Concepts are all individual. Individual, like each person can believe in his own concept. So that is the way the democracy or democratic countries are today. That concepts are based on individuals. Anyone is free to believe whatever he wants to believe and accept whatever he or she wants to accept. So nobody will say that. But if we fear it, then that means like how long will we fear? So we will fear like, one Swamiji instructed me I should do this. How many days like will we be following the instruction of such Swamijis? There will be no gati for us. One Swamiji will say like A, another will say another. Ramana followers will say do vicharam. Paramartha will say, like, if you do vicharam, just who am I, then you will go to a mental hospital. So what would you follow then? Will you follow Paramartha? Will you follow Ramana Maharshi? Amidst that, there will be other sannyasis who may say something else. Amidst all those, like, there will be people like me blabbering out something, saying, okay, there is only Advaitam. So what will you really follow? We have to stand for what we really believe in. Standing for what we really believe in shows our conviction. And after learning such a work like Maya Panchakam, we should never fear anything. Why would we fear? Why should we fear? Why should we fear the world? Because the world is an illusion. And like if we have true devotion, then we will be protected. We will be protected. There is no doubt at all. Oh, like if I fight with my boss and lose my job, like who will pay my parents their debt, like who will pay? Yeah, like if you have to pay the debt of your parents, then you're not fit for Vedanta. Vedanta is not for you. If we are strong enough, Ishvara himself will protect us. That is what Ishvara says over and over again. So this is like I'm repeating this over and over again. We have been repeating this many times, but there are like times when we should grow up. As Paramartha says, like there is no point of staying in the fourth standard always. We should grow up. We should stand by what we believe. If we are not able to stand by what we believe, then there is no conviction. If we are convinced, then we will stand by what we want to believe. So that is something which is very essential. If we do that, Ishvara will protect us. Ishvara will protect us. There is no doubt in that. So as Krishna says, Ananya Chintayanto Ma Ye Jana Paryupasate Tesha Nityabhyuktana Yoga Kshemam Vahamyaham. So whoever worships me with Ananya Bhajanam, whoever surrenders completely to me, Dharma Dharman Parityajya Maam Ekam Sharanam Vraja, renounce everything and seek me. Whoever seeks me, renouncing everything, just completely surrenders to me, I'll take care of their everything. So Amma gives like many beautiful stories to illustrate this point. It's not just Amma's stories, like we can even experience it if we have surrender to Amma. If we have surrender to Amma and we are able to stand by our whatever we believe in, we will experience that Amma or Ishvara. Like if we don't believe Amma, then that's fine. Ishvara will protect us. We can see that. So once a sannyasi was traveling in a ship, so there were some youngsters there. So there were some youngsters like who started like looking at the sannyasi, and even as today's youngsters are, they didn't have any respect for the sannyasi. Okay, this doesn't mean like you should go behind some sannyasi and like become a puppeteer of the sannyasi or fall at the sannyasi's feet and like hold a fan and then wave at the sannyasi. So that is not the meaning. Respect is not something that is to be shown externally through favors. Favors are not respect. Respect means like mentally we respect somebody. So that doesn't mean like we have to agree. Respecting somebody else doesn't mean we have to agree with what the person says. So Shankara respects Patanjali. Of course, we have to respect Patanjali because Patanjali Maharshi is the one like who has written the Mahabhashyam on Panini Sutras. So without that, Sanskrit grammar itself is impossible to learn. Moreover, Patanjali is a Shiva Bhakta as well. So it is impossible to not respect Patanjali. So Shankara respects Patanjali, but at the same time, Shankara also attacks Patanjali's views in the Yoga Darshanam and his Brahma Sutra Bhashyam. So that means respecting doesn't mean like we should disagree. Respect is different from just showing favors externally. So anyway, in this case, these youngsters didn't respect these sannyasis. So why I am saying is like we should not go to the other extreme of so much respect that we blindly believe what they say or we blindly do what they ask for. We should use our discretion. We should use our, we have our intellect to analyze and figure out like what we have to do, what we should not do. Today, like couple of days back, Varshigaji was telling, even sannyasis are there who will ask for favors. So that is why we should never get any favor from any person in the world, whether it is a sannyasi or a grihastha, it doesn't matter. If we ask for a favor, know for sure that we will have to give it back in some other way. In some or the other way, and like we'll become a prey. So we should never do that. We should become self-efficient. As much as possible, we should try to be self-efficient. That is something which is essential. So today, sannyasis also ask for favors. So today the world is hi udara nimitam bahu krata veshah. And Shankara says in Bhajagovindam that today sannyasa vastram, kashaya vastram is also like a means of livelihood. So there are very few real sannyasis. So like sannyasis also will ask for favors today. So therefore like it is, that's why like it is important to respect in the mind, not externally through favors. So anyway, in this case the sannyasi was disrespected by those youngsters. Those youngsters didn't like the sannyasi. Their perspective of things were very different. Like today's youngsters. Today's youngsters don't know what is jnanam. They don't know they don't have any gratitude towards knowledge. They don't have gratitude towards the sannyasa margam or the sanatana dharma. Of course, they are not to be blamed because we find in Amma's Awakened Children itself mentioned about sannyasis who themselves don't know why they are sannyasis. They themselves don't know the value of sanatana dharma. So there is nothing wrong. We don't have to blame these youngsters, but youngsters like today don't know the value of any of these. Rather than like spending time learning Vedanta, they'll be sitting in front of the TV and watching other stuff. So anyway, we are like good youngsters, so we are not like that. But these youngsters were not like that. They started like mocking at the sannyasi. So like the ship started, the ship was going, they started mocking, like mocking initially was it, just looking at the sannyasi and laughing, and then like amidst themselves pointing at the sannyasi and laughing, and then like it was remarks, statements. So amidst all this, the sannyasi just was sitting in Padmasana, he had his eyes closed and he was very blissfully meditating. So they started making remarks, and after these remarks, like they figured out that nothing is happening. So they took the next step. They started poking, like hitting the sannyasi on the head, like a little bit, and then pinching. So it became a lot. So when all of this, like punching, pinching, and all those started, all of a sudden it became very cloudy. The water became much agitated. There were a lot of waves, and it was as if the ship would sink. So it became like that, and all of a sudden they heard a voice from space, from sky. My dear son, you just tell me, like, give me your instruction, say yes, and I'll destroy this entire ship, these youngsters who are disrespecting you, and the other people who didn't stop these youngsters from disrespecting you, all of them, like, I'll destroy this entire ship, but I'll protect you, my son, to the sannyasi. Then, like, the sannyasi opened his eyes. He looked at the youngsters, like, and the people around, like, they were very afraid. Like, they, hearing this, like, they became very afraid. So that is how people of the world are. They think they are doing quite a lot, but, like, one thing fails in the world when nature strikes, like Haiti. So until Haiti, like, people would have thought, like, everything is very proper. We have everything under control. So until 9/11, the United States thought that they could control the entire world. So one 9/11 was enough. It was just a matter of 30 seconds or 2 minutes or 3 minutes. And within that time, everything gets shattered. So that is when a person realizes his state of being very helpless. And that is when a bit of surrender gets towards Ishvara. And then will come the real blessing of Ishvara. So anyway, they were all very afraid. They were scared to death, almost to death. So this sannyasi looked at them and said, okay, you don't have to worry. Nothing will happen. I'll protect you. Nothing is going to happen. And then the sannyasi just remained silent. So listening to this, the youngsters became a bit calm. And then the voice again sounded, saying, my dear son, like, you have made the very right decision. You are really great. So in this case, we see that the youngsters started attacking the sannyasi. So the sannyasi also could have thought, okay, this is not something bad. And the sannyasi could have, like, not stood by his truth. And when Ishvara himself came to protect him by destroying others, like, he stood by his truth that everything is one Ishvara, everything is one Brahman. So since he was able to abide in that truth, live that truth, stand up to that truth, Ishvara protected him. So that is something, like, which we can experience in our own lives. So this is very important to get rid of Bheda Buddhi in our mind, like, getting rid of Bheda Buddhi and having Advaita Bhavam, Abheda Buddhi, and trying to stand by what we have to. So this doesn't mean from tomorrow I'll create a revolution in office, I'll revolt against everyone who is worldly. So we don't have to go to that extreme as well. It's only, like, there will be times when we have to stand by what we believe. Then we have to stand. It's not like always. So tomorrow don't go to office and start create a revolution there. And then you'll be kicked out. And then, like, you'll have to call me and, like, ask me, okay, what happened? You only said, like, and I lost my job as a result. So don't do any of those. We can have in our mind. It is enough to remember in our mind that Brahman alone exists. But when it really comes, when it really comes down to standing by the truth externally, as in really required, then we have to stand by. So if we don't externally stand by, then our mind, our mental faith also will get shattered. If we are able to remain, like, unshattered in faith internally, even while facing dire consequences externally, then we don't have to externally create a revolution, externally revolt against other people, because our faith is so strong that it will not be shattered. But if our faith gets shattered internally, then we will have to revolt against, else our mind, like our mind will lose its conviction, and then we will not be able to maintain Advaita Bhavam. So that is why, so we have to analyze and figure out what is best for us. Whether remaining silent makes us abide in Advaita Bhava, maintain the notion that everything is one Brahman, or whether, like, we have to say out externally, we have to externally stand by that truth in order to remember that everything is Brahman. It depends from person to person. We have to use our discretion, we have to use our intellect to figure out what is right for us. But whether we externally we are doing or not, internally we should always have Advaita Bhavam. We should never get into any kind of attachment and aversion. Any kind of Bela Buddhi will cause us sorrow and sorrow alone. So that is what Shankara says here. Vidhi Harihara Vibhedam Api Akande Bata Virachaya Budhanapi Prakamam Brahmayati Harihara Bheda Bhavana Gadita Gatana Patiyasi Maya. This Maya is so strong that it creates in this Akanda Vastu, in this indivisible non-dual entity of Brahman, it creates these differences between Vishnu and Shiva. And by creating this difference of Vishnu and Shiva, it deludes people into these differences, people to take one stand, either the stand that Vishnu is great or the stand that Shiva is great. And it deludes us so much that even a learned person, prakamam, prakamam means like prakarshena kamam, very strong desire, it means towards anger. It creates anger, the notion of anger, even in a learned scholar. So previously we also saw like Shruti Shada Nigamanta Shodaka, and there that like a learned person gets distracted into this notion that Vishnu is different from Shiva, and like makes him very angry. And anger, as Amma always says, anger causes a lot of trouble for us, trouble for other people as well. So this is Maya. Maya is so strong that like once we get into this Bhedam, then all these notions will come. This work is greater, Gita is greater. There are many people who will say like Gita is greater. Even people who learn Vedanta, they'll say, I think Gita is better. I think Upanishads are better. I think Brahma Sutra is better. Many people who say that, like who have that vision, who have that notion. Ramana Maharshi himself used to say Upadesha Saram, his work of Upadesha Saram preaches like Vedanta, but there are people like who go to him and say like I want to learn only Brahma Sutra Bhashyam because this is Upadesha Saram is very small, very short, very simple. And there are people other side as well. People who are staunch followers of Ramana Maharshi, they have said openly that like I don't like any other Vedantic work than Upadesha Saram. And there are people like who cannot listen to Balakrishna Nair. People won't like even listen to Balakrishna Nair. The very name itself like will cause a kind of a ripple in the mind. He says that Avatara Purushas cannot help, therefore I cannot do that. People of Chinmaya Mission cannot, like there are people in Chinmaya Mission who cannot listen to Paramartha because his guru is like Dayananda Saraswati who split away from Chinmaya. There are people like that, like of course we cannot blame missions and not just like these are just samples. A few people don't spoil the entire mission. So all of these missions are doing good things. So don't think that like I am an anti-mission person. These missions are doing quite a lot. We can point out a lot of good things about these missions. But these bad, like this negative aspects are pointed out to show as to like what would these dual notions lead us into. So these dual notions will lead us into or make us get into such a state where we are like we differentiate between each and everything, and therefore we get angry, so kamam krodham, and then we will end up in suffering. So such suffering, such sorrow is not like it's not something which is required for a Vedantic seeker. We already experience sorrow from this world. We are in this world, we are already struggling. So do we want another sorrow, like add to that sorrow something else? So we don't want that, like we don't want to do that. We are already experiencing sorrow, so like why do we want to add more? So which means we should not have this Bheda Buddhi. So Bheda Buddhi is to be avoided at all cost, irrespective of like where we are, what we are doing. And this Bheda Buddhi doesn't necessarily mean, like as I said earlier, it doesn't necessarily mean that we have to revolt, create a revolution externally and externally stand by that I am having Advaita Bhavam. No. And like if we are not strong enough to stand up to what we believe, if we cannot argue with a person, then like we can just remain silent. But internally, we can definitely have Advaita Bhavam at all times. Advaita Bhavam can be had at all times. It is very simple. It is as simple as remembering that everything is one Brahman. So how tough can it be? It is very simple. It is so simple. It is so simple like that. There is a Subhashitam statement that even a child can do it. So, and like even a child will understand the logic as to why to do it. What is the benefit of doing? Why should we do it? We should do it because it is truth. That is reality. That is real. That is vision of reality. Seeing like or considering everything as one Brahman is true vision, is real vision. So such real vision, such true vision alone can give us anandam. False vision is like seeing water in desert. Where can that lead us to? That can only lead us to dukkham. We see water in desert, we think water is there. So what will happen? Like we will run behind the water. When we run behind the water, we will not find water. And when we don't find water, we will like cry over not finding water, not getting water. We will start all over again. Like we will see water somewhere else. We will start running again. And this will lead us only to dukkham. Whereas if we remember that there is no water in desert, and whatever is there is desert alone, if we are able to keep that in mind, then there will be anandam. It is true vision. True vision means we will not get distracted by whatever appears to be there. Even if like we have to run along with people of the world, like we have to run, Shankara says in his Bhashya, that if we have to run behind the water seen in desert, because people are doing, we will become a lonely person, like we will become an out of group person if we don't run. So we can also run. There's nothing wrong in running. But when we run and when we don't find water, we will not become sad because we already knew that there is no water there. So since we knew that there is no water there, therefore we will not get any dukkham. So that means it is very simple, like it is true vision and it is very simple to implement as well. So it is like it is, we have to follow it, like because it is true vision. It is very simple, and if this simplicity doesn't attract us, then at least the experience of anandam. So anandam being the fruit, if we implement this, that should at least make us like implement it. That should at least instigate us to implement it. If simplicity doesn't work, it will give us anandam. Nanya panta vimuktaye. There is no other way that we can get anandam. Anandam can be achieved only through this way. If we don't follow this, then we will mrityosamrityam gacchati yaiha nana iva pashyati. If we don't keep this in mind, then we will go from mrityu to mrityu, death to death, because we will have veda buddhi. Veda buddhi means prakamam, kamam, krodham. If we have krodham, buddhi nasham, and finally we will get destroyed, pranashyati. We'll get totally destroyed. If that should not happen, we should keep in mind, we should at least implement it in mind. Very simple to implement, like we don't have to externally do it. Whatever we do externally, it doesn't matter. Yogaratova, bogaratova, sangaratova, sangavihina. Externally, whether we do yogam, bogam, sangam, asangam, yasya brahmani ramate chittam nandati nandati nandatyeva. Just remembering that everything is Brahman, Ishavasi, Midam, Sarvam. If we remember that in the mind, then we'll be able to rejoice in bliss. Drishyam nasti iti bodhena manaso drishyam arjanam sampannam chetadutpanna paranarvana nirvrati. Darshana darshane hitva swayam kevala rupataha yastishtati satu brahman brahma na brahmavit swayam. So there is duality that is seen. The objects that are seen are just an illusion. So remembering this in the mind, negating those duality in the mind by asserting them to be Brahman. So if we do that, then we will experience nirvana. We will experience immense bliss. And like when we are able to get rid of these the dual objects of the world by remembering that there is only Brahman, then such a person verily becomes Brahman. He is not even a Brahma with Vidyaranya says, he is not even a knower of Brahman because he is Brahman. Sayoha vai tat paramam Brahma veda Brahma bhavati. A person who knows Brahman, he becomes Brahman. Therefore, he is not even a knower of Brahman. He is verily Brahman. So, if he is verily Brahman, Brahman's nature is Sachidananda. Therefore, he will ever rejoice in bliss. Bliss will be the experience. And that bliss is what we are seeking. We have been seeking. We are seeking each and every day of not just this birth, but many births. For many births, we have been seeking that. And that can be attained very easily in this very birth through the simple implementation of remembering that Brahman alone exists in the mind. So may Amma bless us so that we may be able to remember in our mind that there is no Bhedam, Abhedam or Advaitam alone exists. This world is Brahman. While externally doing whatever actions we have to do, internally remembering that Brahman alone exists, may Amma bless us to implement this. So as I said earlier, again repeating this, don't get confused. So we have to stand up to the truth if we are not able to gain conviction about Brahman in our mind. So if we are able to remain blissful internally while doing external actions, then it is not essential to stand up like externally and argue with people. We have to use our discretion. But internally we should be able to stand up. So a bold person will be able to stand up internally as well as externally. That is something like which will come with conviction. And if such conviction is there, we'll be able to use our discretion as to what to do. Should I externally argue with the person or should I just remain silent? All those we will be able to do it internally. But we should stand by our truth, at least internally in the mind. Contrary opinion or contrary view comes, concept comes, we should be able to just let it pass through the other ear. Not even think twice about it. Just assert in the mind there is only Brahman, so I have no doubt about it. So whatever it is that the other person says, I don't care. I'll just ignore it. So that is something that can be done. But conviction is something which is essential. Conviction that Brahman alone exists. Internally, if not externally, internally, definitely we should have it. Of course, if we are doing externally, then automatically internally it will be there. But internally is something which is required. So we should have it. We should gain that conviction. Keep that conviction. So may Amma bless us to gain that conviction about Advaita Bhavam or Advaitam being true, being real, or Brahman alone existing. So that at the end of this birth, we will be able to overcome Maya once and for all. We will see a summary of the work Maya Panchakam in the next year. Namaskaram.